The following podcast will contain spoilers, tangents, hot takes, and excessive foul language. Viewer discretion is advised. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 248 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today for Mike Flanagan's Gerald's Game is Michael Viers.
Hey, that's me.
Dancing around. I love the little, love the jig. This month marks March Flanagan. We're doing all Mike Flanagan movies this month. It's going to be a lot of fun. He's one of my favorite modern directors, or modern horror directors, that is. So we've got a good lineup. I think me and you originally were going to do Hush, but they fucking took it off Netflix.
Yeah, I was, I don't even care talking about this online because I can't watch it. I can't support it. I was going to buy a bootleg for it, but
yeah, I can't.
Didn't want to go through the process.
It was a Netflix movie that was made for Netflix.
What the fuck? Disney's doing the same fucking thing. They're taking their originals off. One of my comfort shows was The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
I can't watch it. It's gone.
What the fuck?
They took it off of Disney.
I don't understand that. Yeah, because I'm pretty sure we were going to do Hush, and you're like, yeah, how are we going to watch it? I was like, Netflix. And you're like, it's not on Netflix anymore. I was like, what do you mean?
Nope. And then you went and checked just to make sure I wasn't fucking with you, because at the same time, I could see me just fucking with you with that, but I wasn't. That was me being truthful. I was being honest to you.
Yeah, so I checked, and it doesn't make sense because it was distributed by Netflix, so there's no physical copy of it. Like, you would have to, like you said, buy a bootleg, which I actually didn't realize how easy that was, because I bought a bootleg of Hellraiser, the 2022 one, recently, off of Etsy.
Yeah.
I had no, like, how is that allowed? I didn't, like...
They're just not cracking down on them yet. okay. I have some pretty decent ones. I can, like, places that do that if you're ever interested.
Well, I might be, because
I don't do it often.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if I cannot, okay, it's one thing if I can't physically buy a copy of something,
right?
You know, okay, well, that's your prerogative that you want to keep it on your streaming service. But when you're going to remove it from your streaming service as well,
exactly.
Oh, so I can't buy it and I can't give you money to watch it. Well,
I'm kind of
fuck all y'all.
And that's exactly what the second I found out Hush was taken off Netflix, that's when I went and bought the Hellraiser bootleg, because I was like, just in case they decide to take this off, this is one of my, you know, Flanagan, one of my favorites.
The Flanagan shows. You can only get Hill House and Bly Manor on
right.
Blu-ray.
Yeah, they don't have Midnight Mass or Midnight Club, so...
I can get them, but I can't give Mike Flanagan my money.
Yeah, it's a real bitch. That's why I bought that double pack of Bly Manor and Haunting of Hill House. I was like, I'm buying this.
I need to do the same. I was hoping it was going to go down in price a little bit, but I was like, I just need to fucking do it.
Yeah, I bought it because, like, anything that's streaming, that's what I don't like about most of Flanagan's stuff. It was like most of his shit is made for Netflix, which is fine. You know, he had a deal with them. Like, Before I Wake and Hush and Gerald's Game.
And I will say, though, with Mike Flanagan and about, you know, with that deal, it's... Maybe this is a controversial. I think it's the best thing he's done for himself, because I think that deal brought him onto a whole new level. Yeah. And not saying he wasn't on, you know, in terms of quality, he wasn't on that level, but it made him a household name.
It really did.
I don't think if he wouldn't have done Hill House and that been a success, like, I think he still would have been making movies and everything. But, like, I think because of the success of that and Bly Manor is the reason he got Dr. Sleep and so on and so forth. Like, I think it's probably one of the best things to happen to his career. But I'm curious to see what he's going to do with Amazon next.
Yeah, I'm excited for that, because as we've mentioned before on this show, he's moving over to Amazon. So I'm sure, you know, they have a whole different category or, you know, catalog of rights, I'm sure, that they have that they can do, and they're going to make some good shit. I have no doubt about it. I mean, really, I don't think Flanagan has done a bad movie. That's just my opinion.
There's some I like less than others, but I don't think any of them have been quote unquote bad. The only one that I would say is probably my least favorite of the ones that I've seen, because I've not seen them all yet. The one I'd probably say is my least favorite is probably Oculus, just because it's the one I only saw it when it first came out, and I thought that was fun. That was fine.
Yeah.
It didn't leave a big impression on me, but every movie he's done, he's gotten better.
Yeah, he's just ramping. I mean, and Doctor Sleep was one of the greatest King adaptations, in my opinion. Although
the fact that he made a sequel to both to the book and the movie simultaneously and did them both. Like, he did a good adaptation of Dr. Sleep while also making a sequel to The Shining and got Stephen King to fucking like it. Ah.
Yeah, that is not an easy task to do. All of those things you just mentioned.
Stephen King has softened a little bit in his old age towards The Shining, but we all know how that man feels.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's well documented.
It's very well documented. It's no secret how he feels about certain things. So, yeah. So I have some, real quick here, I have some Mike Flanagan, info about the man himself. He was actually born in Salem, Massachusetts on May 20th, 1978.
What a dork. I love it.
Right? His family moved around the U.S. often due to his father's job in the U.S. Coast Guard, at one point living on Governor's Island. Although he only briefly lived in Salem, it left an impression on him, and he retained an interest in both the Salem witch trials and associated topics such as ghost stories and horror fiction. He later lived in Maryland, where he was a student of Archbishop Spalding High School before attending Towson University. He graduated with a B.A.
That's where all that fucking Catholic guilt comes from in his filmography.
He graduated with a B.A., majoring in electronic media and film and minoring in theater. So,
nerd. I love it.
That is some just brief information on him. We'll have some more information next week and the following week, et cetera, et cetera. We should move on to the IMDb roundup. Boom.
I forgot you have a sound effect.
Yeah.
I love it.
One more time for good luck. All right. So this is Gerald's Game, like we said, from 2017, released on September 29th of that year in the USA. It's rated TVMA. Moderate sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, moderate profanity, mild alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and severe frightening and intense scenes, coming in at an hour and 43 minutes. Listed as a drama horror thriller, directed by Mike Flanagan, obviously. Also written by Mike Flanagan. He writes pretty much everything he directs, and it was also written by Jeff Howard, who did the screenplay. He also wrote Oculus, Before I Awake, Ouija, The Origin of Evil, two episodes of The Haunting of Hill House, so he's worked with Mike Flanagan pretty much since the beginning, because Oculus was his second big movie. His first movie he ever did that was theatrical, or not theatrical, but like his first movie was called Absentia, which is actually really good, and it has Doug Jones in it too, by the way, which is fun.
I like me some Doug Jones.
I love me some Doug Jones. He's the guy you don't know because he's always gussied up as something.
He has a really great reoccurring role in What We Do in the Shadows.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He plays, like, the main overarching fucking vampire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, composed by the Newton brothers, who also did most of Flanagan's work, A Hush, Before I Awake, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Haunting of Hill House, Dr. Sleep, Midnight Mass, Midnight Club, Follow the House of Usher, and Five Nights at Freddy's, so that's fun.
They also did the music in Goosebumps.
Oh, did they?
The new TV show, yeah.
Oh, nice, okay. Very nice.
Yeah.
Cinematography by Michael Figmognara. Figmognari. That's a tough one.
I think it's Figmognari, but I think the G might be silent. But I'm saying this as if I actually know. I really have no clue. I'm just like, that sounds right. Figmognari.
That sounds better than what I was saying. Fucking silent letters. So he also did Oculus, Before I Awake, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Haunting of Hill House, Dr. Sleep, Midnight Mass, and The Fall of the House of Usher. It was also edited by Mike Flanagan, so he writes...
It is also worth mentioning that Michael Fiamminar, he also directed... I think he was the co-director in The Fall of the House of Usher.
Yeah.
Cool.
I thought I said that. Maybe not.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe I was just so excited to tell you that that I just wasn't listening.
Fall of the House it's of possible. Usher is fucking amazing. Yeah, sorry, so Mike Flanagan. No, you're fine. He edited Absentia, Oculus, Hush, Before I Wake, Ouija, Origin of Evil, Dr. Sleep, and then various episodes of his Netflix shows. So he directs, he writes, and he edits. That is an amazing task for one person to do.
He's like the horror version of Kevin Smith.
Yeah, I mean, because that's exactly what Kevin Smith does. I mean, even Kevin Smith has done one horror movie. He did Tusk, so, you know. And I guess true. I guess Yoga Hosers might have been horror. I don't know. I never saw it. But
I actually kind of love Yoga Hosers.
Okay, I've never seen it, but
I saw it in a theater, and I think me and Amanda were the only two people in the theater plus one other person.
Oh my god!
And they sat all the way on the other side of the theater.
So it was basically like you were alone. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, it was like a personal screen. It was great.
Perfect. Starring Carla Cugino as Jesse, who is in so much of Mike Flanagan's work. I think nearly everything, but other than his work, she was also in Watchmen as Sally Jupiter / Silk Spectre. We've got Bruce Greenwood as Gerald. He's been in a lot of shit. He's got 153 acting credits, but
I could listen to Bruce Greenwood talk about anything.
Yeah, I love his. He's got a great, like, kind of gravelly voice.
I love me a gravelly voice. It's just I'm going to say this in the straightest way I can. It sends tingles throughout my body. He's just great.
Makes me feel happy. Yeah. He was also in Star Trek 2009 as Pike.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
My boy, Pike.
Yeah, he's done a lot of shit.
Chris Greenwood so much.
We've got Chiara Aurelia as young Jesse, who was also in Luckiest Girl Alive as young Annie. We've got Carl Strukin, oh my god, these names are crazy, as Moonlight Man, who was also in The Addams Family and The Addams Family Values as Lurch.
Wasn't he also in Twin Peaks?
He might have been. He's pretty recognizable.
Yeah.
We've got Henry Thomas as Tom, most notably, you know, Elliot from E.T., but he's also been in a lot. I feel like Flanagan, like, popularized him again.
Yeah. He definitely brought him back. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw him in Haunting of Hill House, and then I saw him in everything that Flanagan did. I was like, hey, it's that guy. And then lastly, we have Kate Siegel as Sally, who is Mike Flanagan's wife and been in most of his work. She is fantastic. Oh, my God. Estimated budget of NA, worldwide box office gross of NA, because it was a Netflix movie. It was filmed in Alabama. You can watch this on Netflix. And
for now,
yeah. Hopefully they don't take it away. Movies that came out around the same time. We've got a whole bunch of shit. We've got It, Leatherface, Mother, Kingsman: The Golden Circle, Blade Runner 2049, Super Dark Times, Cult of Chucky, Sharknado 5, Global Swarming, Brawl in Cell Block 99, The Florida Project, Happy Death Day, The Babysitter, Geostorm, The Ritual, Thor Ragnarok.
Wait, The Babysitter. Did you say The Babysitter, Geostorm? Is that one title?
No, The Babysitter and Geostorm.
There was a comma there. I was like, wait, what's The Babysitter, Geostorm?
The Babysitter, comma, Geostorm.
Okay.
Coco and Jigsaw. There's a lot of shit that came out around this time.
That was a hefty year, man.
2017 apparently was the year. IMDb summary: a couple tries to spice up their marriage in a remote lake house after the husband dies unexpectedly. The wife is left handcuffed to the bed frame and must fight to survive and break free. Now, my first thought about the movie is the fact that I don't know if I like or hate the, you know, that we know kind of like a big, like, you know, the IMDb gives away kind of a big thing about the movie. So I don't know if that was a good or bad thing, you know?
In terms of what?
Well, just like, I think it would have been better for me if it was like a couple tries to spice up their marriage by, you know, going to a remote lake house. Done. Because like saying that, oh, she, you know, in the thing that the husband dies. I mean, I know it happens like the first 15 minutes. I don't know. It just feels like that was a weird move to kind of give so much away, you know?
Well, with a movie like this, there's not a whole lot to go off of.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think since this is the story of her escape, not necessarily of her getting stuck there, I think that's why I think that's like the little piece that people need to get them like, oh, like, because it also kind of gives you the idea that maybe that's how this is a horror movie. This is a survival horror movie, where that first part, like, that could be anything, you know.
This could have been a drama.
Yeah, for me, it's like, oh, how is they? How are they going to sustain this for an hour and a half? How is she going to get out? Like, what's going to happen? Like,
I guess that's fair. Yeah.
They have that phenomenal false finish near, like, at the beginning, where they're like, "Oh, is that really? This is how this movie ends? It ends in like 20 minutes, and then
then what?
Yeah. So,
no, that makes sense. Because you're right. It is more about her getting away, and you know, like, how are you going to fill an hour and 43 minutes with that? Because the husband dies about 15 minutes into the movie, and you're like, okay, you know, we've got an hour and 25 minutes left, you know, hour 20 without credits. What the fuck are we going to do for an hour and 20 minutes? And it really turns into a psychological nightmare that she's kind of found herself in, where she's seeing a version of herself conversating with her alive, you know, quote unquote alive husband, and they're having she's talking to herself and seeing herself, and it's a very interesting way they did that. I think that was very smart.
I've not read the book, but I remember Stephen King said for the longest time he thought it was unadaptable, because I think a lot of it was just her inner monologue.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised if Flanagan did that to
have a visual.
To have a visual, it's essentially a window character.
Yeah, okay.
So in screenwriting, a window character is a character that your lead character talks to kind of give a window into who they are, into their soul. In this case, it's herself.
Yeah.
Kind of amusing. I think it's a smart way to do it.
Yeah, it's Flanagan. I'm not surprised. And I've heard from reviews and stuff like that it is an extremely faithful adaptation, which doesn't surprise me, because of how faithful Dr. Sleep is, paying tribute to, you know, the book, the movie, and the you know, and the miniseries. So but yeah, I mean, I think it's a very brilliant way to kind of, you know, because like if it was a book, it'd be one thing, because they're describing her thoughts and all that stuff. But to, you know, in a movie, you want to see stuff in a movie. So doing that, I think, was a smart move. And also very, very, very creepy at moments, too, when she's talking to Bruce Greenwood's character and he's just telling her like how it is. You're like, man, this movie is like, it's a tough watch, honestly. And that's like kind of my overall thought. Yeah. My overall thought on this is just like, it's a tough watch, but I feel like it's a very powerful experience at the same time, but it is a rough watch.
Yeah, it's a tough watch. It's like it can be, you know, extremely triggering to some people.
Yeah.
It taps into a very primal fear of being trapped and not being able to do anything about it. And then there's just a lot going on with childhood trauma, and that can be very tough for a lot of people. And you know, because it's a really depressing story, in that, you know, every person that Jesse ever trusted fucked her over.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, her father is obviously the biggest, you know, I'd say, betrayer of trust with her, because that's where it all started. But you do kind of find out, so the interesting thing I thought about this movie is the fact that I thought Bruce Greenwood's character knew about her past, and I was like, wow, that makes this rape fantasy really fucked up. But later on in the movie, you find out that he never knew about that, and she never told him about the stuff that happened to her, so now I'm like, okay, you're forgiven for one side of that, but still, the rape fantasy is extremely weird. But it's better now that I know that he didn't know about that, because I thought he knew and was still trying to do that. I'm like, man, that is extremely fucked up of you to do, given her past. Yeah. But
like it's a tough thing, because like there's a lot of lessons that can be learned from this movie. Mm-hmm. One, so that type of dynamic, that type of sexual dynamic, a lot of that comes down to trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not an uncommon dynamic, especially for people who have, you know, trauma, because it's something that they can work through in a trusting place with someone that you should trust. Bruce Greenwood's character either did not know well enough when his wife was being serious, or didn't care, means he was not the right person for this. Right. And then on top of all of that, the big lesson Safe words exist for a reason.
That's what my moral of the story was. I was like, make sure you have a safe word and make sure you have some way out. That's why we don't use real fucking handcuffs.
And then like, cause I feel like the way the Bruce Greenwood's character probably spun this to her was like, oh, let's play around of handcuffs. Cause she wasn't shocked by that. It was something that she was mentally prepared for.
Right.
But then you could tell by the way that she performs it that nothing else was ever talked about. And you need to discuss these things.
Yeah, that's kind of something y'all need to know about. Don't just spring that upon someone after you've handcuffed them to a bed. My God.
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack in this movie. But
there is a lot, yeah.
They were not ready for this. She was not ready for this. They should have had a conversation about this.
Yes.
I also get why she didn't want to tell him. It's a traumatic experience from her childhood. There's a lot to that's in this movie, but
yeah, no, there's
lost the plot there for a second.
No, you're fine.
I just got on a tangent.
You are fine. There is a lot to unpack with this movie. It is pretty hard to watch, but with that being said, there's a lot of stuff that I do genuinely like from a filmmaking perspective. I love the story. I think it's a quite original. Obviously it's based off a Stephen King novel, but I mean, like, you know, this is an adaptation of that, so I feel like the story is very original. You know, you go out to a lake house, she gets handcuffed to the bed in a way that she really can't escape without breaking something, and then husband has a heart attack. Like, solid story, and it's terrifying because they're in the middle of nowhere. There's no one around for miles. The gardener's already come to do the yard. The maids have already been there to clean. Their neighbors aren't coming up there till like months later, so they're alone for an extended period of time in the
movies
middle of
like
nowhere.
This are like, I don't know if I ever want to move out of the city. I want
right,
people around.
Right. Like, I don't know if I want to move to BFE.
Cause like look at like your next is another perfect example. If they would have had neighbors, that shit would have gotten squashed faster.
Right. And then the neighbors that they did have, they got killed.
Like, yeah. So
they would have had many more neighbors. It would have been a completely different story. So yeah, I do like the setting where, like I was just talking about, I like the setting, how it's this remote cabin in the middle of the woods. It's always a great setting. There's a great couple instances of foreshadowing, like the dog, for example. They see the dog in the road, and then of course that comes back around to bite Bruce Greenwood's character in the arm, because he pretty much dismantles some of his face and his arm. So that was fun. The second I saw that dog, the first time I watched it, I'm like, something's going to happen with that dog and I'm not going to be okay.
Yeah, I remember seeing like, that. Because I've seen this movie before and I was like, I don't remember how that dog plays a factor, but I do remember that dog plays a factor in this movie.
Like, I don't know how, but I know something's going to happen. I also really enjoy how quickly the story gets going. I mean, you're 15 minutes in, Gerald is dead. Now it's an hour and 20 minutes of her surviving, trying to figure out how to get out of there. And you're like, oh man, this movie's probably going to be pretty poorly paced. No, I feel like it's paced very well. And I think it probably could have been a little shorter. There definitely could have been some scenes that were cut, but I mean, overall,
I think they could have cut that ending, but we'll talk about
that.
Oh
yeah. Trust me. That's one of my biggest dislikes. So yeah, it's just gets up and goes, doesn't waste any time. And then, like you mentioned just a minute ago, there's a scene where she escapes and you're like, oh, okay, so that's we're done.
I was like, I forgot that happened.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, is this really what happens? And I didn't even process it as a dream.
Yeah, once she escapes, she like turns around. It was like, it's that simple. And then you see her Carla Cugino on the bed and you're like, oh, okay, so you didn't really escape. Your mind told you to do this, and
which was a great little bait and switch. It was great.
It was a great visualization, and I'm sure that happened, something like that in the book, but it was definitely a great visualization to see that. You're like, oh wow, I really thought she was getting out of here. Like, is there going to be some way she can't leave? Like, what the fuck? No, she's not out. She's still there. I also loved when I just love the dynamic of Carla Cugino and Bruce Greenwood, because you essentially have two Carlas talking to each other. You've got Bruce Greenwood there being a very weird kind of creep sometimes with the things he says, but he's got some great fucking monologues, like some like very one shot, one take. I don't know about one take, but one shot monologues that I was like, wow. That's why I didn't really have a favorite line in this movie. I just kind of really enjoyed all the dialogue. Cause I mean, this movie's, I'd say like 70 to 80% just dialogue. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that happens, but.
And coming from a filmmaking standpoint, like, you know, as a person who is a filmmaker, if I would have been presented this script, I would have had some intrepidation about it, not only from subject matter, but just from the simple fact that, like, entire fucking movie takes place in a bed. How many different ways can I shoot this fucking bed?
Right. It's like The Exorcist. Like, most of that movie takes place in that room. A lot of it does.
And, like, I don't think, like, it's rare that maybe the Flanagan ever really repeats himself, and like, he does it. It's just like, from my own perspective, I can say this about myself. I don't think I have the skill necessary to shoot a bottle film, you know, a film that, or a television show or whatever, that all takes place in one location.
Yeah.
Pardon me. Because I just don't think I have the skill necessary to be able to shoot that without repeating myself. And Flanagan finds a really interesting way to do it.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And that's another like I have about this movie, is the fact that it's so isolated and contained, and it, like, it's basically in one room the entire time, besides, you know, towards the end of the movie. And I think that guy showing up, and this is the thing, I really like the guy that shows up in a room, because for the longest time you're like, oh,
the Moonlight Man.
Yeah, the Moonlight Man. I love that they put him in there, and Bruce Greenwood's like, yeah, that's not imaginary, that's death, he's coming to get you. And I'm like, cool. Which leads me into my first dislike, and that is, I don't like the fact that they made him a real person. I wish he would have stayed as death. Like, I
don't mind that they made him to a real person. I wish it would have been handled differently.
Okay. Well, you said they could cut out that ending. What part are you talking about? The ending?
I don't think we need the entire, like, wrap up sequence of her writing a letter to herself. Like, I get why they put it in there. I don't think we needed the scene of her going up. Like, even if they would have kept that part, I don't think we definitely don't need the scene of her going to the courthouse to see him.
Yeah.
And all that. Like, I kind of like the idea of us not knowing if he's real or not.
Yeah.
And then, like, I feel like they could have, like, I feel like they could have, if they really wanted to show that he was a real person, like, I feel like it could have just been handled with, you know, a news story or something, like, or even just briefly, like, oh, you know, man known as the Moonlight Man or whatever the fuck, you know, the such and such killer has been arrested. And then that's the only moment that we got, like, oh shit, that was real. But yeah. Then, like, her explaining his entire backstory, it was interesting, don't get me wrong, but, like, her explaining his entire backstory, who he was, why he does what he does, yada, 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 I just felt like it was more explanation that was needed. Mm-hmm. I would have liked just a little more intrigue, because I liked not being 100% sure if he was real or not.
Yeah.
And I that's the world I wanted to live in terms of, I wanted to not be sure. You know, I wanted there to be elements to prove that he was real, but for no one to ever truly know.
Well, that's how I felt. That's exactly how I felt. And I'm like, I don't like the fact that they made him real. I like the mystery. I like not knowing. I think they could have ended the movie right when after she crashes and she gets out of the car and falls and the people come up to, like, you know, like, rescue her. I'm like, you could have just ended it right there and been done. Like, even leave it a mystery. Oh, did she survive? Because, you know, she survived. But I'm sure the ending was probably done because it was in the book, but also it does provide some resolution for Jessie, because she can't sleep at night because she keeps seeing the Moonlight Man in her room. So it gives her closure to know that he's not, or that he is a real person that's in jail. So I get why it's like a necessary ending, but I don't want it. I could have used less.
There's so many Stephen King endings that just don't fucking work for me. And it's so much a thing that he makes fun of himself in chapter two about it. Like,
yeah, that's true. He does.
he's just, that's my biggest flaw. So when I first saw this movie, I gave it a 4-star rating. This time I gave it about a 3.5. It's still really good. It just didn't have as strong of an effect on me.
That's fair.
Plus, this is unrelated to my rating for it. I had a very strong Mandela effect with this movie.
Oh yeah?
I completely forgot that Henry Thomas was in this movie.
Mm.
And I really thought it was Rory Cochrane playing her dad. but I was getting it confused with Oculus, where Rory Cochran played the piece of shit dad in Oculus.
Yeah.
So this entire, when Henry Thomas popped up, I was like, when's Rory Cochran get to this movie? When does he show up?
Which he plays the other scumbag dad in the other movie.
Yes.
That's fucking, yeah, Henry Thomas.
Mike Flanagan, are you okay?
Yeah,
you have a bad relationship with your dad.
That's the only time I didn't like Henry Thomas. I'm like, you know, I love you and everything you do, but I was like, you're kind of a skeeve in this movie, man. Damn it.
Damn it, Elliot.
So a couple other dislikes I had here. I didn't like Gerald's game at all. That game was fucking fucked up, and fuck you, Gerald. That game was horrible. Also, who's nightstand?
Can't we just play Hungry Hungry Hippos? What the fuck?
Let's play Candyland or something, shoots and ladders. Whose nightstands are that fucking far away? I want to know, because those things were like 8 feet from the table. Like, bro, my nightstand is, I'm pretty sure it's touching my bed. It's that
also
close.
Like, I have a question.
Okay.
At one point when she was like pulling on the handcuffs and really couldn't do it, and I don't remember if it was before Gerald died or if it was her memory or like her talking to herself. But one point Bruce Greenwood says, "There's no, it's no good. They're reinforced." Who reinforces their bedstands? Like, before, like, did you do that just because you knew you're going to be doing handcuff play? Because if so, that's extra fucked up. And if you just did that before you even knew this was going to be a thing, why'd you do that,
bro? Why'd you do that, bro? Yeah, I got some questions for...
Like, what are you doing that you need to reinforce your bed frame?
Yeah, those things already looked sturdy enough, I think.
It's like solid oak or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know wood.
What is this, pine? My hot take for this movie is this might be Carla Cugino's best performance. I think she fucking crushed this role.
I completely agree with you.
Okay.
Because here's my hot take.
Okay, hit me with
it. She is always really good in Mike Flanagan's stuff, but I also think she's... This sounds mean to say. I think she's extremely overrated in a lot of Mike Flanagan stuff.
Okay.
Because she does a very similar performance in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where she's always very, you know, calm and calculated and does never really gets above a certain, like, she always feels not quite wooden. She's better than being wooden, but like, she always has the same performance style.
Okay.
And in this one, I just feel like I saw a complete range of performances and just little things like that just hit me so emotionally. Like when she said to Bruce Greenwood, "Stop calling yourself daddy," like things like that, especially having it be the second time that I watched it, hit me in a completely different way. Like, she's good in so much stuff, and she's still good in Mike Flanagan stuff. I just think she's a bit overrated in his stuff.
Okay.
But this, she is so fucking good at.
Yeah, she is incredible in this movie. And I mean, Bruce Greenwood is as well, but yeah, I just think she's fantastic.
It's weird seeing Bruce Greenwood without a mustache, just having watched House of Usher.
Yeah, that's true. And just be in boxers the entire movie. He's he's half dressed the entire movie.
I was cold watching him. Right? And then also when he got naked, I'm like, damn, Bruce Greenwood, you've been working out.
Right?
Where'd that body come from?
I was like, ooh, this is good. It was when Gerald came back to life, I put in quotes. When I first saw this, I was like, oh, this is fun. We're going to see a visualization for like, you know, she's like hallucinating. I was like, ooh, I like this. So that's kind of when I was really
I love it. I don't remember the exact line, but it was something along the lines with, if you're ever wondering when you've lost your mind, that moment's now, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. That was your moment when you were hooked?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I just loved that line. I don't remember the exact quote of it.
Yeah, it's something like that.
But actually, my true hook was the false escape.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
Because
okay.
I was like, oh, because then, because at that moment, I was like, oh, I don't know what ride Mike Flanagan is going to take me mm-hmm. on.
Okay. All right. I'm sure. So I actually, you know, I usually don't have a point where I get lost with a movie, but I always include it because I have times like this. When they made the guy real, I was like, all right, you kind of lost me there. And that sucks because it's like at the end of the movie. And I'm like, oh, like, really? You lost me. If you would have just not included that, I probably would have given this half a star
Stephen
more.
Stephen King's story, and I feel like maybe they work better in book form. I don't know. But like, whenever people adapt them to to the screen, he likes to wrap things up, which is not a bad thing necessarily.
No, yeah.
But they don't really work for me very well. And I don't know. I just, yeah, that ending just didn't work for me.
Just didn't fucking work. I'm sure we have the both have the same horror moment, because there's really only one. Correct me if I'm wrong, but for me, it was the degloving scene when she.
That is the official term.
Yeah.
Degloving. Like, that's whoever came up with that term had a sense of humor.
Gives
me the heebs.
Watching that a second time, the whole time I was like, ooh, this is worse than I remember. Oh God, this is terrible. Why am I watching this?
Amanda didn't even watch the screen. Yeah, She's just like, tell me when it's over.
Yeah, that's exactly what Gabby does. Not going to go over favorite kill, because that's not really a thing. Favorite character, I mean, it's just Jesse. You know, you really connect with Jesse's character, and you feel horrible for her character. I mean, good God, I think she's gone through a lot. Yeah, least favorite character, Tom. I mean, he's the skeeviest person who took advantage of a 12-year-old, which is disgusting.
Her mom was no fucking treat either.
Yeah, she was kind of rude to her daughter. Like, you know,
that's one way to put it. She was going to say she's a fucking bitch. She's rude.
Fucking son of a bitch. Yeah, just being extremely rude to Bruce Greenwood's character, or Henry Thomas's character, talking about how she's just a daddy's girl and blah blah blah. You said, so was that that line you mentioned, was that your favorite line?
Probably. That's just the one that sticks out to me the most. Yeah. I didn't like write down my favorite line, because like it's kind of like you, it's like there's so much. I love a talky fucking movie. It's probably the reason I loved Follow the House of Usher so much, because it's just Bruce Greenwood talking for like six to eight episodes.
So great. And I was
like, talk to me more, Bruce Greenwood. But it's just a lot of fucking talking, and it's all very well written dialogue.
Yes.
I love performance. You know, for me, like I don't need explosions. I don't need action. I want some good fucking performance.
Yeah. And that brings us to the performances. And I think everyone in this was great. I mean, Cugino and Greenwood together were fantastic. You had the added like bonus of Henry Thomas and Kate Siegel. Like everyone in this was fucking great. I feel like the performances were extremely solid.
I will say I didn't love that ending with the Moonlight Man in the courthouse, and Amanda's as soon as like Jesse walked in, Amanda's like, "You're gonna be held in contempt of court."
Yeah, exactly. You can't just walk into a courtroom and start talking.
I will admit when Carol Stricken as the Moonlight Man freaking broke out of his cuffs and just kept going, "You're not real," like quoting the last thing he had heard her said. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, like that's a pretty good moment in a shitty ending.
That was, but,
like, I love his performance of that moment.
Yep. Yeah, I did too. Yeah. Me and Gabby looked at each other. We're like, that was kind of like a little, like almost a sweet moment. Cinematography.
And then I also love it too, because like my very first instinct was, it's like, oh, how funny would it be if he also thought she was fake?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what if he? Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
I don't think that's the way it. I don't think that's what they're trying to be getting at. But
That's kind of how I
took it. As it's like he remembers her, and that was the only thing he could probably say. Was,
yeah,
because he was quoting her. But regardless, I love that moment. Even though like that entire moment could be taken out of the movie.
Yeah,
but since it's already there, I like that.
I do
moment.
Like it.
And it's sandwiched between shittiness.
Shit sandwich. Cinematography is great. Mike Flanagan always does a great job.
I want to talk about the cinematography a little bit.
Okay.
So there's some great little moments in this. The way that, so cinematography is all controlling light, but the way that they use the lighting in the room and the lighting on the floor to give you a transition through where the day is progressing. Mm. It wasn't just, oh, it's nighttime, it's daytime. The fact that if you watch the movie, there's like, the light that's, you know, shining in through the windows through the trees is moving throughout the scene.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that.
It's a beautiful little touch. It's a thing that not a lot of people do, because a lot of times you don't need to watch the time progress like it does
right.
Like you do in this. And in some ways, and sometimes the light's probably moving faster than it needs to, because they're trying to give the idea of time passing in a rapid, you know, in a more rapid way. I can't think of the right word. But then like just the way that Mike Flanagan uses light and darkness in this movie, like the scene where Jesse as a little girl is taken out of the room after she cut herself, and then you see her family and it all just goes dark. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, it's him saying in some way that that was the last moment she felt part of the family. And just the way that he does, just the way that he did that sequence, and it says a lot without being obvious.
Yeah, there's one of my favorite shots is actually at the end of the movie when she's driving away and she's like hallucinating and she sees the eclipse happening above her. Moonlight Man is in the back with those like piercing eyes, and it's just it's such a good shot. It's like a high shot of the car, and then it goes back to goddamn good.
The shadows in this, like when the first time that we see the Moonlight Man standing in the corner, and you're almost wondering if you see anything.
Yeah.
I love shit like that. I love when a filmmaker's not afraid to be like, because sometimes, especially in big budget horror movies, a lot of times they use too many lights, where things are just almost like, I love the Hatchet movies, but the first Hatchet, at times the night scenes felt brighter than the daytime scenes because they had too many lights on.
Too many.
So I love when it's like a filmmaker's not afraid to play with darkness and keeping things intentionally dark. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a limit. I think the scene should still be lit, but doesn't mean you have to necessarily see everything.
Right. Yeah. I think the way he did the night shots with the Midnight Man were perfect, because you really were trying to figure out if someone was there, and, you know, he eventually kind of steps out of the shadows and you're like, all right, there's a fucking person there. I see you. There was a surprising lack of score in this movie, which I felt added to the tension. So there's really not much to speak on with the score. And we kind of went over all of my favorite moments, honestly, besides the fact that I love we talked about the isolation, but, yeah. Actually, we did talk about all my favorite moments. Is there anything else you'd like to mention for this movie? Anything we glossed over?
Let me think. I feel like it's such a tightly contained movie that it's there's. I will talk about one thing. The inclusion of the dog was really funny to me. Like, it worked for the narrative.
Yeah.
At no point did I ever think that dog was a true like threat.
No, yeah.
He just looked like he was like, oh, hey, human, I'm just hanging out.
I'm just going to eat some of Gerald and maybe try to eat some of you later. I don't know. We'll see.
I know. It's like, it's always hard because it's always hard to get a dog to be aggressive on camera, because you really don't want it to be.
Right.
Because dogs are performers. You can't usually fake that without actually pissing them off.
Right.
But so like, that's usually why, like, a lot of times you don't show much of a dog. So like, just have the dog just hanging out there being like, Hey, I think you can do this.
I'm just here. Just you know, eating Gerald's skin.
I'm just a dog. So all that stuff. Oh, and actually, so I think one of my other favorite lines, because it's just a really amusing running joke, was Gerald talking about the Kobe beef. Like, it's actually from Kobe.
It's from Kobe, and it's $200 a portion. that was great. She's like, well, I saw four steaks in there. I figured you could have one. Yeah, I figured you could have one. It's like, that's like expensive shit. I'd kind of be upset. And I do like that line, too, because he's like, just let him have it. It'll be the best meat he's had. And I was like, yeah, until he eats you, dude, because that's going to be fresher than Kobe beef. So enjoy getting attacked by a fucking dog. All right, then. We can move
on. Yeah, I don't really have much more. I just wanted to talk about those two little things.
No, I appreciate it. That's perfect. Let's move on to the post-review stuff here. There's one tagline. Some games you play, some you survive. Cool bit of trivia, though. I like this. The book Midnight Mass that Jesse throws at the dog in this movie was written by Kate Siegel's character from Hush, which was also directed by Mike Flanagan. So that's pretty fucking cool. If you've seen Hush, you know that Kate Siegel's character is an author, and it's fun that they actually got to make that a miniseries. The headboard of the bed is the lower half of the Lasser glass from Oculus 2013. I thought that was pretty cool. If you've seen Oculus, then you know about that big giant fucking mirror, which I'm pretty sure Mike Flanagan has in his house somewhere. I would if I fucking did that movie. And then Gerald refers to the dog as Cujo, which is obviously a reference to Stephen King book. Yeah.
I laughed during that, yeah.
Yeah. Goofs, it is very unlikely that the car's airbags would not deploy with such a hard crash, which I noticed that too. I was like, wow, she really hit that tree and there were no airbags. That is not a safe car. And also during that scene, in her weakened state, she didn't put her seatbelt on, so she probably would have gone through the window and not survived that, especially with no airbags. This is rated 6.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 3.1 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Has a certified fresh rating of 91% on the tomato meter and a 70% audience score. I gave this a 3.5 out of 5. What did you give it?
Also 3.5 out of 5.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Similar movies, according to Letterboxd, we have The Babadook, 1408, The Shining, The Haunting of Hill House, and Night Swim. Similar movies, according to IMDb, we have Hush, Doctor Sleep, Oculus, The Haunting of Bly Manor, and The Haunting of Hill House. I've got a couple funny reviews, if you do too.
I forgot about it again, so I'm working on mine.
All right. I'll go first then here. I got 2.5 stars from Hania. It says, kinks are canceled until y'all learn how to behave. And I agree. I 100% agree.
All right. I got a four-star review by Dia Bijou 2727. It says, a really good Viagra advertisement.
Perfect. 2 stars from Joe March. I watched this with my grandma. Okay. That was a weird move.
Half star by SH. This movie is my paralysis demon.
Wow. 4 stars from Ian. This is why you use fuzzy handcuffs. Exactly. Don't use real fucking handcuffs. Golly geez.
All right. This one's a half star by Aiden. If it was between sawing my nuts off with a kite string or watching this again, I would genuinely have at least a moment's hesitation to think about the options. Oh, utterly my brutal.
God. Holy shit. 3 stars, my last one here. 3 stars. This really went from a straight porn gone to 127 hours to a family drama to a ghost story to some Jeffrey Dahmer shit to an uplifting female conclusion, and I honestly loved every second. Okay.
All right, give me 1 second. I want to find one more.
All right.
All right, I'll go with this one. This one is 4.5 stars by Sarah Loves Baja Blast. I also love Baja Blast.
Same.
The review is insane thing not to run by your wife.
Yeah, for real. It's a huge thing to just not mention. Okay, Michael, where can people hear the sultry sound of your voice on your podcast?
We are on the I am on a podcast called The Shameless Picture Show. You can find that anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can also find us on the Cinepunks Network. Currently, we are in season 8. We have 1 episode up thus far of season 8 with our good friend over here, Austin Proctor. We talked Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And then hopefully this weekend, if I get the last half hour cut in time, I will be, by the time this comes out, hopefully it'll be up already. Our second episode will be me talking with Matt Harding. He does promotions for Severin Films. We'll be talking about the movie Dracula versus Frankenstein by Al Adamson.
Nice. All right. Well, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is staysspooky@outlook.com. You can follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. Michael is Viers10, 2008. That will be the first episode of March Flanagan. Next week, me and my buddy Corey are going to be back doing Oculus. So until then, stay tuned and stay spooky.
Stay spooky.